Welcome to SportsWise, a podcast about sports and the law with your host, me, Gabe Feldman, director of the Tulane Sports Law Program and co-director of the Tulane Center for Sport. On this episode, I'm rejoined by Casey Schwab, CEO and founding partner of Altea Sports Partners, for part two of our conversation about college sports, this time with a focus on the future of private equity in college sports. Why would private equity want to get involved? What would it mean for college sports and college athletes? And where do we go from here? And we also discussed the future of college football realignment and even a little NFTs, blockchain, and crypto. Here we go. Let's start with private equity and the outside capital.
What's I was just going to keep going.
View on private equity, and then we'll come back to realignment. Let's start with private equity.
So private equity are people who like to make money.
Now honestly, let's go to commerce realignment.
It's a joke, but outside capital is going to come in to distressed industries. And it's making money. And it was a joke, but it's like there's two levers. More money, more revenue, less expenses. So I, as you look at college athletics, even if the athletics departments, the conferences, and then the other entities that are control, like NCAA or CFP, even if you can't generate more revenue, I think everyone would agree that you can reduce expenses. And again, it goes all the way back to what we were talking about first, which is misaligned incentives. If you're a politician or an academic or some combination of thereof, if you're a president or a chancellor or you're on a board of regents, you're not necessarily laser focused on more revenue, less expenses, aka EBITDA, every single day. And that's not to say they're wrong or bad people. And in fact, I would argue as just a quick aside, like a lot of that is like really good for the world and really good for students and higher education and universities or nonprofits. That's really actually a good thing. But private equity doesn't operate that way. And when you think about the collision of outside capital coming into a distressed industry that overspends because of what I just talked about, misaligned interests, and under-commercializes, then it seems to me like there's going to come a breakpoint. And I think the breakpoint is going to come when, if and when, and I think it's a when, but I've been wrong before once when I sent that first paper to you, Gabe. And actually, I was wrong. The only time I was wrong is when you didn't actually edit the document, one of some other document, and I said, "Hey, you do it." And you said, "You're the DJ, and I'm the rapper." And
I said, "I'm the DJ, you're the rapper." Yeah,
you told.
I used that line yesterday too on someone.
The moment when there is this rush to the Super Conference of football, and we know the end is there. We know the Big Ten, for the most part, is there. And then there's questions around the other conferences in terms of what are the broadcasters, the TV networks, what teams do they want to see on Saturday? The moment there is, if there is a consolidation of 40 or 50 teams, that means there's going to be 50 plus teams vying for, call it 20 seats, because we know there's going to be top 20, 25. There's going to be another 20, 25 open seats. And at that moment in time, there's going to be desperation in a distressed industry, which is more revenue, commercialize it better, more effectively, raise more money in sponsorship, licensing, ticketing when the media rights are tied up, and cut expenses. And then you have additional financial constraints like exit fees, as we've seen.
Wait, hold up. Before we get to the details on the commerce realignment, just to back up. So the PE case, the private equity case, is that college sports in some ways is a distressed industry, and there are certain schools that are not getting the massive TV deals, or maybe even some that are, they might start to shrink there. And they need an influx of money to be able to compete with the schools that are generating more money from the media deals, right? Is that fair?
Yes.
Or do you think the SEC schools would consider private equity money, or do they not need it because of their television?
I don't think they need it.
So the distressed part of it is the distressed part is the schools that are on the outside that aren't in these power two, which is why everybody's trying to get to the power two.
You want me to overtalk you more?
What's that?
You want me to overtalk you and interrupt you more?
Yeah, please. It's people love in podcasts when people are talking at the same time.
People love.
That's what makes that's the feedback I get. Just
is crosstalk. Yeah. No, let's talk at the 1, 2, 3 talk. So those schools are going to try to find additional ways to generate revenue. Outside capital may be the way to generate additional revenue. Private equity is happy to look at a distressed industry like college sports, put in money. And then the problem comes back to your misaligned incentives, that the private equity folks are trying to make money. And they're trying to see this as an investment, and they want to see these entities operate like moneymakers, but the presidents and the chancellors and the academics and the faculty members aren't focused primarily on that. They're focused on their overall mission. And so there might be a disconnect. And so that means private equity is going to be unhappy, or like private equity knows this, right? They know that they are not dealing with a tech company or a media company that they're going to put a bunch of money into and then turn it around. So does that mean that private equity is not going to come, or that it's going to come at a discount? Like how does it work out?
So to back up, just to put a finer point, I don't think that the SEC schools or the Ohio States or the Michigans, or that I don't speak on any of these schools' behalf, but if I were looking at it and I go, if you're at the adult table when it comes to football because of your brand and your alumni base, I see much less need for private equity money, because you're going to be less distressed, or you're going to have less just need for it. You're not going to be desperate. The word desperate is obviously an extreme word, but if you think about the different things that are going to be needed to get to the adult table of college football, one is a fully equipped stadium, and you have to have all the technologies within the stadium for all the things that NFL stadiums have. A lot of the college football stadiums need renovating for like facial recognition technology, or the bandwidth to have betting, in-game betting, which is a whole nother discussion, but the stadiums themselves need renovating. So that could be a big time upfront payment. Second one is exit fees from the current conference. If you are trying to leave your conference, like we've seen in Florida State, full disclosure, we don't work with them, but so I'm reading the same thing that everybody else is as we talk to our other ADs around the country. But exit fees are real, and they're real upfront payments on top of the lawyer fees that would go with fighting those battles. And then the third one is player costs. The world that we live in around, or you and I live in your role as a consultant with Altius and otherwise, and the world I live in with athletes and in the big time football, college football, and big time college basketball are going to be paid some version of pay for play of revenue sharing. That's going to become an expense. And if it's 10 million bucks or 15 million bucks times 10, those numbers add up pretty quickly. So those three are just three examples where money is going to be needed to get to the adult table. If you're any of the schools in the Big 12, any of the schools in the ACC, and potentially some of the lower performers in the Big 10 and the SEC. That's how I think about the need in terms of getting. Okay, so then you go to your actual question, which is the misaligned incentives. Is that going to mean private equity doesn't come in? I don't think so, because to me, private equity looks at distressed industries, and they look at industries that have cash flow, positive cash flow, EBITDA. They make money. And college athletics departments, because of football primarily, these TV contracts, they're never not going to make money. So it's not that different than from when I was at the NFLPA, we launched One Team Partners. We contributed our EA contract with revenue and expenses, and the video game rights and the trading card rights. The premise from the outside capital or the firm, the PE firm, Redbird, was people aren't going to stop playing Madden. Same thing. People aren't going to stop watching, you name Ohio State, Michigan, Georgia, LSU. People aren't going to stop. So that the demand.
I stopped playing Madden, by the way.
Why? You weren't very good at it? Carpal
yeah.
tunnel?
Yeah, it was arthritis, early arthritis.
Yeah. You're playing Madden right now, right?
Yeah, I'm on the second screen. Yeah, we are so actually playing.
I don't think private equity is going to care about the misaligned incentives that I was talking about earlier, as long as they can capture those guaranteed, and I'm using air quotes in case this isn't, I still don't understand the video audio piece of podcast. Yeah. As long as the money's coming in, private equity is not going to care about the misaligned incentives. But who is going to care are the presidents, chancellors, boards, academics, law professors who sit in their ivory towers down in New Orleans and pontificate about things, yep, about what happened in the world. But seriously, I do think that there's going to come a moment where the athletics and college football is so important to and so embedded in the DNA of some of these schools that the boards and the presidents and chancellors are going to they're almost going to be forced to come up with $100 million, $200 million, and where are they going to look for that? And if they look to private equity, there's going to come a moment of, okay, we need to be okay with changing some our North Star a couple degrees towards for-profit interests.
And then what do you think happens to, we'll call it future casting, not crystal ball? What happens?
Futurist. That's what I'm on LinkedIn right now. I'm a futurist.
Yeah. I knew you were going to put that on there before you did it because
it's like somebody who
a futurist.
It's like somebody who makes maps. They're a geographist.
So my question was, what do you think happens to college football more broadly?
I think it's
because not every school in the country is going to get money from private equity and not going to be willing to spend $100 million or whatever it might be on to compete in football. Are you saying that you think there'll be a break with the top two tiers or whatever, or top tier, top two conferences?
Yeah, I do. The top tier of football teams. And I don't know if it's going to be the Big Ten and SEC as they stand today. I think it's going to be the top brands in college football. And by top, it might be 35, it might be 40, it might be closer to 50, but there's going to be the top brands that break off. And that is being driven currently by the networks. The networks don't want, I'm not going to name any teams, but they don't want a subpar team playing even on a Saturday afternoon window in September, early season. They want premier games every weekend. And so as the TV networks drive it, I do think there's going to be a breakaway. So if your question is what happens to the programs that get left out, frankly, I think that it completely changes the DNA of the athletics departments and those universities and how they view sports within their overall ecosystem of the university. And it becomes much less marketable to come to this university because you get to go this big state school and you get to go watch games on Saturday, and twice a year we're going to have marquee teams that win the national, that go to the playoff every year, come here and you get to watch them.
And what about other sports? Do you think those super conferences take all the sports with them, or they just form their own little football league?
It's interesting because there's a world in which we talked about private equity where there's a breakaway, a privatization, commercial privatization and breakout of football, which has been discussed when writers have written about this. If you take the hospital model, public-private model, where schools either individually on their own, which is what the word individually means, Gabe, like individually means a single, singular.
Interesting.
Or they go together.
Write that down.
And they contribute their football revenues and expenses into a single entity, and there could be two of them. There could be 10 of them into a NewCo. And then that NewCo, which stands for new company, game, that NewCo then operates those football programs or that football program in a commercial manner. So they pay the athletes as employees. You could bargain with the athletes and create a collective bargaining agreement. In that case, there's a license fee and a usage fee, rights fee paid back to the university. The other sports I don't think are impacted as much. If it's, and we've had conversations with PE firms exploring that model, the what I would call the NewCo model, the equity, taking equity in a NewCo model with either a single program or multiple programs. In that iteration of the future, from your friendly futurist, I think the other sports are preserved in a way that they're not preserved if football stays under the umbrella of the institution.
Okay. Explain why you think the other...
Because now you've effectively you've done a partnership no different than with any of the other rights holders, Legends, Learfield, Playfly, JMI. It's just a beefed up version of buying rights. Right now, it's limited to commercial rights, not operating rights of the program. But if Gabe and Casey LLC, and we're a private equity firm, Gabe and Casey private equity firm came in to five state universities and we said, hey, we're going to buy your football programs, all the revenue, all of the expenses, and all of the operating rights to those, put aside like whether schools would actually, how this would actually work procedurally. If we took that all, now it's just a contract. It's a third-party contract between Gabe and Casey LLC, private equity firm, and these five programs, and they each own whatever, 10%, and we own 50%, and now there's a new entity in which these five schools each own 10% of. And they get paid up front from us for those future, the future EBITDA with the multiple.
And then they, the schools then focus on other sports and
yeah. up the, and there's the a revenue. Payment up front. There would be a payment up front. So you take whatever the positive cash flow is for, in that example, for each one of those five programs. And when I say positive cash flow, it's EBITDA. And you put a multiple on it, let's say 10X. And if it's 25 million bucks that they've made, that they make right now in EBITDA, so that's $250 million of value that they're getting. And if they take 10%, if they take 90% of that, now my math is getting hard. If they take 90% of that's $225 million up front. And now they can use that money to cover all of their other sports.
And that's for the Super Conference. The schools
well,
in the Super
Not necessarily. I don't think that's directly tethered to the Super Conference. I think that could happen independently. That could happen today. That could happen under the current conference model today. A school or multiple schools could sell their football programs effectively, revenues and expenses, to an outside entity or put it into a new vehicle, a joint venture with private equity. But my point earlier was, I don't see why a school would do that, had the incentive to do it, unless their back is against the wall.
And but why would private equity want a, again, we're not going to name a school, but a third tier FBS school that never sniffs the college football playoffs? How much are they going to be willing to pay for those TV rights? When you said the networks don't really care about them, they don't really want to show them.
I guess it would. So you said third tier FBS school. I think it depends on two things. One, the guaranteed cash flow coming in from the current TV deals, which are long and they're staggered, but there's guaranteed cash flow coming in, which if you put it over expenses just for football creates positive cash flow, aka EBITDA. So they're not going to care about the success on the field in that example. They're going to care about that positive cash flow, put a multiple on it. And two, the multiple expansion of an entity like this. So take any institution, any football program of the Power Five, and they're a one-of-one asset. And as we've seen in the last, I don't know, decade, 15 years, pro sports teams, the multiples have gone absolutely crazy because they're one-of-one. So if you look at colleges, it's a new asset class of sports ownership that didn't exist before. So there's two premises of private equity, right? If they come in, the first is we're going to grow the commercial revenue better than you could, right, and or reduce the expenses. But they're not going to talk about that because that's insulting. But they're going to always pitch, we're going to rent you, your commercial revenue goes up 3 to 4%. We're going to do it at 8. And whether that's true or not, multiple expansion, I think is going to be true because it's a non-fungible new asset class. Nobody's been able to buy college sports teams before. And if you can convince a school to do it, going back to our other discussion around what the motivation of a school would be, or whether they'd ever actually do it, you do have a new asset class. And if you think about what PE does is all they want to do is buy it on day one at a multiple and then sell it at a higher multiple. Right. In 5 to 7 years. So they don't care about the long-term prospects. They care about 5 to 7 years. And then the second buyer is looking for a third buyer. And the third buyer is looking for a fourth.
And is there any world, I think I know the answer to this, but is there any world where you see the schools saying, look, we're going to take X, whatever the dollar amount is that private equity is pouring in, And we are going to commit a percentage of that to our Olympic sports and our non-revenue sports, whatever you want to call them, under the argument that part of what makes college football so popular is that it is part of the college and there are all these other athletes on campus and these students on campus. And so that it actually will make more money even if they're spreading it out. Or does this just become, like the you said earlier, all the money spent on football and then that leaves money left over or time or resources to run the other sports? But because right now, in a lot of ways, at some schools, football and men's and women's basketball help subsidize these other sports. And if one of the fears is that with athlete compensation and rising costs, that it'll be more difficult to subsidize these other sports. And I think that's part of people's fear with private equity kind of twice over, is private equity doesn't care about broad-based athletic opportunities, much less any of the other sort of academic or social issues on campus. And the schools have the incentive to pour money into the things that are generating more money, which is football and sometimes basketball. Long way of saying, is there a world where this can help broad-based opportunities and these other sports, or is that's pie in the sky, ivory tower?
Yeah, I do think there is. So there's basically two models. There's structured equity, aka debt, which is, hey, we're going to give you a bunch of money. We're going to give you $250 million for 13 to 15% interest, and you can use it however you want. And in that example, the school is going to use it to save its football program or get the football program to the big kids table. That's right. In the NewCo model, which is a different model, the model that's very similar to what we did at One Team Partners, where there's an actual new entity and that new entity houses football, that upfront payment and then the payments along the way, the license fees along the way every single year, those go back to the school and they can be used however they want, however the AD and the president and the board see fit. So I actually think one of the benefits of the NewCo model, it's a much more complicated model than just like debt, just like a loan. But one of the things I really like about it is that very point, which is you can take that money and now you have, whether it's $125 million or $200 million, this big chunk of money, which is an upfront payment. And now you can pay to subsidize your other sports, keep them alive. And potentially, if the premise holds true that the money goes up along the way, you could actually potentially afford to pay your female student athletes their wages if, in fact, they become employees, which is a whole nother big if, question marks, which I know you've discussed on the podcast with people with hair not as good as mine, but much smarter takes. But I do think, in all seriousness, that the private equity model, because it doesn't care, because money doesn't care about, investors don't care about anything but generating the profit. If you aligned the interests with football and you said, go, you take football and take it to the moon and we all win, then taking it to the moon means we can do with our share what we want, which could very well mean, and again, putting on my personal hat, should mean supporting broad-based programs and gender equity and female athletes.
I think that's the most prolonged, serious conversation we've ever had.
I got a couple in there, but I would say they were like B pluses. I would say at the beginning of this discussion, it was a little rocky, but if you're still
I'm talking about just that last 7 minutes.
No, I know, and you probably lost all your listeners at that point.
There's only four to begin with, and I actually downloaded four times, so I'll listen to it.
Abby,
my wife. All right, last question.
14.
Okay, good. Maybe it's not the last. Two questions.
1% milk is perfect. You get the flavor, but it's still not as, it's not quite as, doesn't wear you down as much when you go for a run after. 1% milk.
According to some bio, you were, I don't know if you are, a sought after public speaker, and you have keynoted, I didn't know that keynoted was a verb, topics including the impact of legalized sports wagering on athletes, and the integration of blockchain technology in sport. Legalized sports wagering, that's too much to get into now, but the integration of blockchain technology in sport, is that, that's your thing?
That was my thing. Let me give you the real example. You go to eBay right now and type in Gabe Feldman autographed trading card. How many of those are authenticated to the extent that the value doesn't overall drop for Gabe Feldman trading cards?
Is that a rhetorical question?
No, it was a real question. The point is, when I was at the NFLPA, we were exploring. Yeah. One of my jobs was to try to figure out with Fanatics and Panini. I was about to explain who those companies are to you. With Fanatics and Panini, to try to figure out how do we curb counterfeit. And there's the back end, and that kind of works. Pretty much doesn't, and was boring sending CNDs and things like that. And we spent probably 2 years and a fair amount of money on exploring if you were to put blockchain technology into the manufacturing process, or after an athlete signs an autograph on a trading card or anything else, and you immediately upload it on the blockchain, now you could have a one-of-one asset. Remember the non-fungible phrase that you're
using? I remember.
Feels like this is not about mushrooms and fungi, Gabe. Fungibility is a different concept where...
But is it? This is what's happening now. They're being authenticated.
No, it never worked. But I'm saying it's a good idea. It's still a good idea. So I had this whole plan. I spent a lot of money.
Yeah.
The NFLPA budget, I should say my budget, and my time on how do we integrate this technology that creates this authenticated ledger, and how do you integrate that into the process of memorabilia and authentic merchandise. Authentic jerseys and trading cards. And believe it or not, you know who Frank Abagnale is?
I do.
I had a call with him one time through this process. It was fascinating because he now is a consultant at the time. This was 6 years ago. He was a consultant for the credit card companies to help them curb counterfeit with credit cards. And his quote was, don't build a turnstile in the desert. Meaning you can create all these processes, but if a counterfeiter can just step around them, then they're not going to work. And that was the moment when I realized I spent about a year and a half, 2 years on something that was very interesting, but I was building a turnstile in the desert. And then I called you and said, hey, do you want to get into college sports?
I like that. Abagnale's had a roller coaster of a career and life. I know most of it from the movie Catch Me If You Can. But
So this was before Skype existed, but we were on a conference call. And one of my colleagues at the NFLPA, I'm not going to name names, literally muted it and said, Casey, stop asking him about the movie. We're actually having a conversation. Because I was like, my first question was, did you consult with Leo? Were you and Leo like in a room? This is not a joke. He muted the phone and said, Casey, stop it. We're having a real conversation here. Does that surprise you at all?
No, it doesn't. But I still don't really understand blockchain technology, and it's I'm glad that I didn't take the time.
I still think it's fascinating. I still think it's a good idea. And let me say this as we apply it to college, because I'm going to be the podcast host here. There was a boom, 6 years ago, 7 years ago, of crypto collectibles. Remember Crypto Kitties?
Yep. I'm glad I didn't get into that either. Yep.
So crypto collectibles were huge, Crypto Kitties. You could trade a kitty, a cartoon cat, for a Ferrari at one point. You could with actual real dollars. And then NFTs came. And so all these NFT companies popped up around college trying to use NFTs as the quid pro quo for college athletes getting paid. And whether it's quid pro quo or not, the transfer of IP, I don't really care. The point is the business itself, it crashed. I don't want to be insulting to anybody, but the NFT business didn't take off or didn't sustain itself with all the venture capital money that went into it. I do think that there is a market in college athletics for somehow tying fans with the athletes directly and creating a digital to physical experience. So whether that's an NFT or a crypto collectible or a digital trading card, if you have some way to connect the fans directly with the athletes in college as opposed to the pros, it's super interesting. It, like the Washington-Michigan National Championship game, if Jim McCarthy scores a touchdown in that stadium, how many fans, this is rhetorical, lots of fans would have swiped left or right or whatever way you have to swipe to give digital coins, tokens, or real money to him. And I do think there's a big opportunity there for anybody who's listening and wants to start their next business, call me first and then we can do it together. But I do think NFTs and blockchain have a place in college today.
I will continue to not study it in the hopes that you're wrong. And if I'm wrong, then you'll catch me up on it. I'm going to give you the last word. So 30 seconds, whatever you want to say in the next 30 seconds.
This is dangerous.
I'm going to turn the TikTok camera on. And
if you have an iPhone, if you type pew, P-E-W, space P-E-W, which Gabe, you do not, it goes, it shoots lasers and it goes pew. I just learned this last week. It's amazing. I'm not kidding. Pew pew is awesome.
It, think, 10 seconds.
One of the things we're doing at Aldi is obviously staffing up a lot of these positions on campus, Michigan, Stanford, Coastal Carolina, Wisconsin, and more to come. Our, the biggest challenge right now in college athletics at large and our business is finding talented people who embrace chaos and embrace every single day not being the same. So there's my advertisement for if anybody's listening who has who either is interested in a job or knows somebody interested in a job, our job is really to bring the new leaders to college athletics.
All right. And they should reach out to you on your cell phone. And let me give them their cell phone right now. What do they do? They go to the Altius website and
just go to your, go. If you have an iPhone, just type in pew and just send it to the last person you texted who also has an iPhone, type in pew and your application will have been submitted. No, the jobs are posted. The jobs are posted online at Teamworks Online. Obviously I'm reachable on LinkedIn. Gabe is reachable. Just go to his house. His address is 1231.
Just pull the blockchain on the other end.
It's an authenticated ledger. But seriously, that college athletics, Oliver Luck, who's our chairman and a mentor and a friend, has said for the last 4 years now, 3.5 years, whenever we started this, that the next 5 years in college athletics are going to be more, are going to create more change than the previous 50. And I think that's reigning true and is going to continue to reign true.
Thank you, Casey. And I will close on a serious note. I started this podcast about 3.5 years ago with the goal of educating people who listen, but also educating myself and giving myself an opportunity to talk to smart people in the industry so I can learn more. And I've been able to do that. And for this episode, I decided to switch it up and talk to you, but I appreciate you coming on. That was a joke. That was good. Casey fell off his chair. You can't hear the laugh.
Does video work on podcasts?
But no, seriously, thank you. Congrats on all your success. You were the 54th guest I've had on. So maybe in 3 or 4 years, I'll have you back.
Yeah. Better than 55th though. Glass half full on this Friday afternoon game.
There you go. Thank you, Casey.
Is that it? Are we done?
You can say you're welcome.
Thank you, Gabe.
Thank you. There you go. All right. That's it.
And thank you for listening. And thanks as always to my loyal sponsor, the Tulane Center for Sport. See you next time on SportsWise.